Hi and welcome to Revision Media here this afternoon. Well, the afternoon here in London on this April 5th, 2021. I hope you all had a wonderful Easter. You'll be joining me here. It is 11 or 10 p.m. Central Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time. And as I say, over here in the UK, London, where I am, it's 4 p.m. So welcome, everyone. And as I say, I hope you had a great weekend. Got a lot to get through today. I've got time, I'll discuss the latest on the vaccine passport talk over here. There's a story which I have to say made my blood boil. And if I hadn't been at that service, I think I would be would not be doing this radio show now, but would probably be sitting in a police cell probably somewhere. As the police entered a Catholic service on Good Friday, of all things, you know. Good Friday, in they come, up on the altar, the pictures of them. I would have not have let them get on that altar without a fight. On Good Friday. Where is any kind of sensitivity or respect? In they come because of social distancing and some people weren't wearing masks. Entering into the church up in the altar. I mean, I am still enraged by this. There's no words can really describe my anger at this, because this is just a demonstration of outright contempt for Christianity on Good Friday, the most important weekend on the Christian calendar, and the police have the audacity just to go in there about masks and social distancing. Could you imagine them doing that on a mosque any time, let alone Ramadan? Their most important occasion on their calendar. I would have told them to get out. In fact, there was a clip of another similar event. And I think that might have been in the United States. I'm not sure. And the guy did what I would have done. I would have said, get the hell out of here and take what was coming to me if they didn't. Like it. And this guy, because there should have been outrage, there should have been that outpouring of disgust at that line being crossed. And as I say, that's not a line that would have been crossed anywhere, I don't believe, apart from Christianity. And this guy displayed the rage that I would have displayed and what I felt. And the police backed down and left. Do these clowns, some of them are so robotic that they just think they can trample all over people's beliefs so incessantly if you're a Christian. No exceptions made on that particular weekend. I mean, Christianity gets a big enough hammering at the best of times, and most Christians allow it to happen and give up ground all the time to the Bolsheviks and their insidious encroachment on our lives and on our culture. But on that one weekend, you think they could have shown a little bit of respect, a little bit of sensitivity, but no. Anyway, this guy told him, it was clear. It's a difficult thing to explain. I mean, just that something which is a line that's crossed, which is difficult to explain. And as I say, Christians have this sort of insidious encroachment of their beliefs and position and our culture at large. But on Good Friday and that one weekend, couldn't you have expected perhaps a little bit of leniency, a little bit of respect? But oh no. So it was refreshing to see this one guy, because he was just outraged, and he said, get the hell out of here! And they did. It's like, it's almost like they sort of suddenly realized, oh, this is important to this guy. Oh, we've really, you know, we've really stepped, we've crossed the line here. We're, you know, we're really offending this guy. But I think if in the London incident, they wouldn't have listened to that. I would have wrestled the police to the floor before I'd have let them on that altar. Because you got to take a stand for something. You got to draw a line somewhere. And there's very few Christians that you can go into battle with who either haven't got the discernment. This is why I had all these issues with the local church here. I've got a pastor who I think is a clown debating me that we must obey the authority no matter what. And I thought he was disingenuous. And it's a shame that I have to think that way about him, but I couldn't conclude anything else, or that he's just a complete coward. Because they don't stand for anything. They never draw a line in the sand. And the church is now, in the West, largely a joke, apart from pockets here and there. But I wouldn't have let them near anywhere near that altar. And I would have just, I wouldn't have cared what happened to me. Anyway. More positive note, Orban. There's a man with some character and principle and courage. Orban plots new populist alliance for European Parliament. This is very interesting. They're actually using the slogan, make Europe great again. that's a good story. I don't think I'm going to have time, but on later on in Republic Broadcasting Network, maybe we can touch on this Georgia voter integrity bill where this, you know, Joe Biden, you know, attacking the state of Georgia because they had the temerity to bring in a bill which would bring some integrity to voting in Georgia where you have to have voter ID cards to actually vote. Well, it's obvious that the Biden administration is not going to like that because in all likelihood they stole that election, so they don't want any accountability or any rules and regulations around voting. Makes it much more difficult for them to rig the next election. So if we can get to the stories, and another more tragic story, now this is something as a result of the COVID thing that's been touched upon, we've talked about, the cure being worse than the disease with COVID, be it economically, be it people's mental health, people not getting treatment for cancers and other diseases, either because they're too scared to catch COVID by going to the hospital, or because they've been brainwashed by and intimidated by aggressive advertising and messaging and propaganda from the government about protect the NHS. So people haven't wanted to go near the NHS for fear of overwhelming it, and people haven't had cancer treatments and all that sort of stuff. But one of the more, I suppose, nebulous aspects and consequences of the lockdowns and masks and just the sort of disconcerting surreal nature of the whole thing and how it throws people's futures into question and all of that is the whole kind of effect on people's spirits and people's psychological and mental states. And it seems that over the last year or so, there has been a spike in suicides, quite a significant spike. Now, I'm going to look into this more to try and get some hard facts on it. But it seems that there is ostensibly a troubling and tragic spike in suicides among young people. Now, we can speculate about why young people are getting affected by this, but maybe they're worried about their futures. Or maybe lockdowns have just crushed them in a way which older people are able to deal with. I don't know. But the reason I came across this last night was a guy called David Paulides. Now, this guy, David Paulides, I've been listening to him for about 3 years. I think at one point I may have contacted him to come on my radio show on Revolution Radio. He's an impressive guy. He's an ex-cop. And he basically is... He is exploring and investigating a phenomenon of missing persons, or, and started off in big national parks in the United States, and then it's expanded where he's seen phenomena of this happening in cities, and not just happening in cities in the United States, but in cities across the world. And this phenomena of, I mean, I haven't got time to go into all of this, but a guy's called David Paulides. And there are patterns to these disappearances. But he was talking last night, and I haven't listened to him in a while, but it's always been in the back of my mind, you know, I must listen to that guy again, see where he's up to. As I say, he's a very, very good thinker, okay? The reason I like him is because he's exploring something, and he doesn't come at it with the point of view that, you know, with an absolute agenda. He's not committed or married to any one explanation for this phenomena of missing people, missing persons that he's investigating. And he's a thorough investigator. He's an ex-policeman, and he's a very impressive guy, professionally and to listen to as well. A mature guy, and he knows how to think. He knows how to not jump to conclusions, and because, you know, a lot of people come out with a lot of claims, sensational claims, particularly within the kind of, you know, the kind of UFO sort of movement, you know, sort of like, you know, I went to, I spoke at a conference once called Bases. I was filling in for someone else. I mean, this would rather epitomize the worst of this phenomenon I'm talking about, where people, the claims they make, they don't even make any attempt to provide any evidence or support for their claims. And apparently for a lot of people, that's enough just to make mad claims about aliens and Mars and, you know, Bigfoot and whatever it is. You know the type of people I'm talking about, that whole sort of UFO movement and alien movement, and these people are very, very sometimes dogmatic and married to their positions and attached in a very emotional way. And it's quite laughable, actually, how so many people believe so much without doing any thinking as to, you know, the veracity of the claims that some people make. Someone stands up there, they've got a little bit of charisma or whatever, maybe they don't even need any charisma, they just make these mad sensational claims, and for some reason people maybe want to believe these things or whatever, but they believe them without requiring any kind of support or evidence for these claims. And my mind can't think that way. So I mean, you know, we can all make crazy claims, but if there's no support for it, then why should you believe it? Anyway, this guy is the complete opposite of that. Okay, he's an impressive guy, David Paulides, and I haven't listened to him in a while. And actually, you know, I actually lost some sleep listening to him last night, because usually I tune into him so I can find out, because it is fascinating hearing about these missing persons cases, and they've been going on for decades and maybe centuries, it's just really, really intriguing. And I suppose it's human nature, even though it's a human tragedy. It is human nature to sort of to get intrigued by unexplainable, and, you know, phenomena where was, you know, when it's when you have this investigator ruling out any possible reasonable explanation for it, any kind of like normative explanation. That a guy with his background in police investigations would be able to establish if it was possible. So the cases that he deals with are, and he's pretty rigorous about it, are only cases where they fit this criteria that he's talking about, where they're kind of inexplicable. missing persons cases. And that is kind of fascinating. And I suppose that, you know, and again, it's kind of human nature where even though it's tragic, you sort of just, it pricks your interest when something is unexplainable. And, but also I think there is something, and it's just, there's that innate sort of primal fear in us that on some level I believe is aware that there may be more to this world or this, you know, sphere that we live in than we know. Now, it's not something that I think the majority of people are cognizant of in your daily life. We're too busy with, you know, earning money and our relationships and, I don't know, the chores of life and, you know, social media and all the stuff that we get consumed by. But I think at the back of our minds, there is that primal fear, that just that fear of the unknown. Is there aliens out there watching us? Is there a spiritual realm that sort of intersects with ours? Is there ghosts? Is there demons? You know, this type of stuff. And when you hear these stories of people just disappearing, to my mind, I think, and I know that it's a ubiquitous phenomenon because the guy has 257,000 subscribers on his YouTube channel, and his videos have huge numbers, and the people who write in and everything else, this is a ubiquitous, universal phenomenon, and people are interested in this stuff. So I tend to listen to him, and of course, in my own mind, you know, this would still fit into the category of, I guess, conspiracy. You know, when we do these shows, we are, you know, participating in investigative journalism as best we can, without probably for most of us having the formal training. But we're interested in truth, let's put it that way. Whether it's this COVID thing, whether it's 9/11, whether it's the manipulation and control of our economies, whether it's social engineering, you know, whether it's spiritual beliefs, we're interested in what is the truth, you know, what is reality? Because that's all the truth is reality. So if you want to live in reality, which I do, or I at least want to know what reality is, then, you know, you want to have as much information and you want to investigate it and explore it to your best ability. Because it's just safer and wiser, I believe, to live in reality. So, you know, you may as well have as much of it as you know, as can be attained. So when you know, when we do these radio shows, as I say, whatever it is, we're investigating. And this would still, even though it's kind of off the track of, I guess, cultural issues and geopolitical issues and the type of stuff that I would tend to normally talk about, I am interested in spiritual matters, and I am interested in some of these other phenomena. And so I find these kind of stories about missing persons and this guy's, you know, documentation of these things very interesting. But last night, when I was listening to him, it actually kept me awake. I almost regretted listening to it because I went to bed and it kept me awake for a couple of hours. But it was just so profound because the problem, and I realized halfway through listening to this, that the gentleman, this is the guy, David Paulides, had lost his son recently, which is bad enough, but as the video went on, I realized that he had lost his son to suicide. And this phenomenon, where young people are in increasing numbers, it seems, and it's something I'm going to explore more. In fact, I'm going to try and put my mind to it over the next week to focus on, to see. And it seems it's a ubiquitous phenomenon, but from what I understand, it seems to be particularly in the Western spheres. Because it's a great tragedy. And this guy's had, you know, people writing into him from letters of support, and it was very, very touching. People from all different kind of backgrounds and faiths. Some of them sound more, you know, from the traditional Christian views. Some of them are more, you know, from spiritual views. But I couldn't help but be touched by it and moved by it, and the sort of outpouring of support that this man has, because, you know, I have a son, and it is a constant worry that, you know, you're always worried about your children. And in fact, my son has a friend in the United States who he speaks to a lot, a guy called Sean on Instagram and some of these other old social media platforms. And I was blessed to have a lovely Easter Sunday yesterday with my son and his mother. And we had a nice meal. And he was telling me that one of his friends, a friend of his friend Sean that he communicates with, killed himself recently. He's 21. Young guy, I guess, you know, his background is kind of like he's a sort of Norwegian, Anglo-Irish kind of stock, I believe his background was. He's 21 years of age and he recently killed himself. Now, I think that was to do with a young woman who ended a relationship with him. But still, I mean, is there any greater tragedy than a young person committing suicide? I don't think so. It really is one of the most painful things that you could imagine ever going through, which would, of course, destroy the lives of any loving parents or brothers and sisters, you know, who would have to experience that. And so, depending on one's level of strength, you know, it would certainly haunt you for the rest of your life. And I'm very mindful to talk to my son and make sure that, you know, in fact, I said to him yesterday, I don't care how bad you think things are, son, in your mind, whether it's at your age at 17 or 18 or 21, I said, well, however bad you think it is, it's probably not that bad in all likelihood. Whether it's a woman, whether it's something else, some sort of trouble with the police, who knows? It's probably not that bad where you would have to kill yourself. And I've been through some very, very difficult times in my life. One in particular in 2008. And I thought about suicide a lot. But this video goes on to talk about a phenomenon which I had kind of like, you know, put on the back burner a little bit in terms of, you know, because I'm so preoccupied with all this COVID stuff and the economy and all that. And those are important issues, of course. Very important. But this whole topic does get into whatever your background or beliefs, a kind of a spiritual aspect of other, let's put it in that way. So I'm not, you know, as a Christian, I would see them as demonic entities that do affect people and do come into people's lives. And one of the things over, if you study any kind of demonic possession or people who are demonized, let's put it that way, it doesn't have to be these sort of sensational kind of demonic possession cases like, you know, like The Exorcist or whatever, which was based on a true story, and these cases are a real phenomena. But when you look at, you know, these kind of people who have, like, who are very, let's just put it this way, who are very troubled, and to my mind there is often demonic activity going on with these people's lives. And, you know, one of the things that people often diagnose as paranoid schizophrenia is hearing voices and seeing things, but one of the most common is hearing voices. And I think a lot of these voices tend to encourage people to kill themselves. And I know, because I was in a bad way in 2008 for a mixture of reasons. Some of them were my own fault, and some of them were, you know, malpractice, really, by the medical establishment over here. They prescribed me with drugs they never should have given me, and you know, it caused a lot of problems. But there were thoughts and encouragement and whisperings in my ear at the time to kill myself. Now, I didn't do it, but I was suffering enough where I could have done it, and the voices were saying, end the suffering, you don't need to do this, enough's enough. Now, if you come at things from the worldview that I do, the demonic realm hates humanity, and one of the things it loves to do is to get human beings to kill themselves. Anyway, I kind of digress a little bit, but this piece really, really struck me. And so this guy, this poor guy, David Paulides, he seems, you know, understandably has, you know, he was off, he wasn't doing videos for a little while, and then he sort of came back onto the fold recently. But, you know, he looks like a broken man, but he's dealing with it, and he's had a lot of encouragement and emails and letters from people. And as I say, he doesn't really have his own, I don't think he's got any real sort of, like, you know, established concrete spiritual beliefs, like you know, like someone who's, you know, say I'm a Christian or I'm a Muslim or whatever. He doesn't really know where he's at. He's an agnostic, I guess, when it comes to spiritual and religious concepts. But he's very open-minded, you know, so he wasn't bigoted enough to the point where, you know, when a Catholic priest wrote to him, that he would, like, shut the door on that. You know, he's not one of those guys. Well, I'm spiritual, I'm not religious, you know, I have nothing to listen to what those Catholics have to say. You know, they're all hypocrites, you know. Of course, you get people like that, and you throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, everybody in the Catholic Church is a pedophile. You know, that's the way these people sort of tend to think, or like to think, or whatever. Or all those Christians are all just hypocrites, and, you know, all those Muslims are all just, you know, terrorists or whatever, you know, or morons or whatever, you know. This guy is a bit more mature than that, and a bit more gracious, a bit more compassionate. But here he is anyway, talking about this, and he does get onto this issue, and I think it's really, really powerful, because it kept me awake last night. I wish I'd have listened to it during the day, because I'm really a bit underslept today. But anyway, here it is.
Personal experience of your loss. As a Roman Catholic priest, I personally know what the outcome is on a suicide, and that can take a whole toll on a human soul. It can affect all that are concerned of a family. My devotional prayers are with you all. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. This statement is part of the Gospels of Christ. Suicide is sometimes a sickness that is silent to others who may not see it coming. As for you, David, you may not get an answer that you may want to hear. Nevertheless, it is rising due to these challenging times. As a priest, I am there for those who mourn and seek comfort through Christ. Our faiths can sometimes heal the wounds of a caring soul. Suicide can also be a paranormal-related situation. I can personally say that I have saved countless souls who are affected by an entity, but an unknown spiritual entity. It is more common than you think. This type of situation of a spiritual kind can enter a soul at any given time or place. A demonic can take advantage of a soul who is suffering from mental stress or sickness. It is known throughout the teachings of my faith as my pastoral obligation as a priest. I know too well as oppression, obsession, or possession can take place for a dark reason. David, I can only give you insight to what has been revealed in these dark times. Have you noticed the stress that this country has gone through on this rhetoric and demonization of our political fallout? And also to say that this COVID has put this country on a financial strain at every level in our lives, not only to mention our extreme weather fallout that has affected our emotions, these are signs that has brought suicide out on the youngest souls who are innocent. Not enough is being done to help the innocent on this mental stress depression. Until this country and its problems can come together in peace, we will see more stress on the young. They are the future. May we all find peace through Christ. Yours in Christ. I never even knew that a Catholic priest would watch my channel. Excuse me. But not only Catholic priests, but all denominations have written to me. Everyone you can imagine. All different faiths. And I want you to know that I'm not going to demean anyone. It's not my style. And whatever your faith, I'll listen. And it's not that I believe or I don't believe, but I think during these times we need compassionate souls. Another letter. About a year before my parents were married, they were at a bonfire on a beach next to a national park and forest somewhere in California. Well, my dad stood straight up and started walking towards and finally into the water in a trance. My mother went after him once he started walking into the water. She said she was yelling in his face. Thus, finally, with the water up to their waist, snapped out of it, and my mother walked him out of the water. First of all, let me tell you, the water in Northern California is cold. The average is between 48 and 54 degrees. You can get hypothermia very quickly. Later on, he described his account to my mother, telling her that he heard what sounded like many women singing a song in his head in a language that he couldn't write down or really describe. But at the time, even though he couldn't understand the language, he was basically being told that he was to come with them to what was laid out to him as a paradise with the most beautiful women he had ever seen. My father, being a sailor, said it was the song of the siren. But he also said if my mother hadn't been there, he would be dead. You may think this story, you may use the story if it corresponds with any of your other stories. Many thanks for your consideration. So my question to the audience, he heard it, but nobody else heard it. So we all have antennas in our head that we can hear different frequencies. Or was he targeted by something to do something to himself? If he was targeted, why was he targeted? And if he was targeted, then whoever the suspect was obviously knew he was around a lot of people, so it was meant to make a point that maybe they could control people at their whim. I don't know. I've always thought that people who hear things, they don't necessarily have to have mental illness. I think that there are too many stories of people hearing things where it was real and they really did hear something that was unusual. So just.
But of course, you know, when you live in an increasingly secular society, first thing to go from a secular society is kind of like demonic sort of superstitious kind of realm, you know, before finally God himself is removed from the equation. But usually that kind of demonic realm is the first thing to go. And in many ways, the mental health model has replaced that. So it is quite bigoted, really, because the door is closed on any other possibility to these type of phenomena, except to diagnose it with the, you know, general broad wide net of paranoid schizophrenia, strange behaviors that up until maybe even a century ago would have been quite reasonably and commonly attributed to kind of certainly in a Christian culture as someone experiencing demonic activity. But that idea is no longer entertained and is often considered dangerous, you know, and superstitious. Because that means we can't treat the problem. Well, the irony is maybe your ideas are dangerous because your mind is so close to the possibility, any other possibility, that all you do is just pump someone full of drugs so that they're so subdued, whatever they're experiencing is kind of, yeah, it's just suppressed.
Because you hear something, don't believe it that you have mental illness. This was a prayer that was sent to me. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sell love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. O Divine Master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console to be understood, as to understand. To be loved, as to love. For it's in giving that we receive, and it's in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it's in dying that we are born to eternal life. Amen. That was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful prayer. New letter. Dear Dave, I'm just learning the loss of your precious Ben. I cannot imagine the depths of your pain. I consider you part of my brotherhood, and this is the reason I'm reaching out to you, offering support. One of the things in my experience with suicide is that like many crises we face, Initially, there are many people there, and in a time we can find ourselves still struggling, but with few people seemingly to turn to. I'm now retired from a combined 38 years in military and law enforcement career. I'm a former crisis negotiator with more than 20 years experience dealing with suicide. I currently run our peer support program at operationsfirstresponse.org, a group dedicated to veterans. I've attached my bio. I wrote to you before because of our shared interest in the missing. This time it's personal. I too have my share of both personal and professional losses and near losses to suicide. I attribute my successes in helping others struggling with suicide and depression by helping them see the spiritual component of their struggles. This is not something I learned on the job, but something gifted to me by my faith and experience. You are correct. There is a spiritual war going on. You stop there. I know that sounds extreme. Oh, spiritual war. But you know, I posted a link to Australian suicides of young men in my last video. If you haven't seen it, go back. Look at the pinned post and you'll find it. But when you start to hear from around the world the number of young people that are committing suicide, this is not normal. If this is related to COVID, then in my humble opinion, the cure is worse than the disease. Because we're...
There it is. And that's just with suicide alone. That's not, that's, you know, not even considering for a moment the economic effect on the population at large, whatever your age, gender, ethnicity, whatever. It's not considering economic factors. It's not considering the medical factors of, as I said, of people not getting, you know, treated for cancer, heart disease, you name it, whatever. People who may be struggling with alcohol problems and stuff like that. People who weren't able to go to 12-step meetings. People who weren't able to go to church. Or whatever it may be. The cure, in my opinion, we've been saying it for a long time, has been worse than the disease. And this whole COVID thing is outright criminal. Because we are dealing with a satanic criminal syndicate that is pushing all this stuff, that pushes the wars, that destroys the economy, is looting and stealing with all the money printing, which is a tax. It's getting the rich richer and the middle class and the poorer even poorer. These people are murderers and thieves. Jesus described in John 8:24 the people who killed him, and I think we are largely dealing with the same type of people and those that are bought and paid for them. And these people are literally minions of Satan. Ye are of your father the devil, Jesus said to them in John 8:24, and the lusts of your father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in truth, because there is no truth in him. So these people were claiming to be Abraham's seed, and Jesus said, no, your father is Satan. Now, obviously, he was speaking from a spiritual point of view, that you're, who leads you and who your real father is Satan. And that's what we're dealing with. It is a spiritual war. And it's resulting in all these suicides. But yeah, he's talking about, that's not, you know, what he's talking about, I think it's the most tragic aspect of it, young people killing themselves. But that's only that part of it. It doesn't deal with the wider economic effects and all the other stuff that is just, it's an almost endless list.
Losing our next generation of brilliant people. The letter goes on. And as you told your audience, we are not alone. No, I am here for you to talk. No, I am praying for Ben's eternal rest and for your entire family at this painful time. And yes, it is my sincerest belief that at this moment, he is in the presence of the Almighty. In closing, I would like to offer you a favorite prayer. I hope it brings you some comfort. Pray for peace of mind and heart. Eternal, holy God, I come to you burdened with my worries, fears, doubts, and troubles. I do. Calm and quiet me with peace of mind. Empty me of the anxiety that disturbs me, of the concerns that weary my spirit, and the weight heavy on my heart. Loosen my grip on the disappointments and grievances I hold on to so lightly, tightly. Release me from the pain of the past hurts, of the present anger and tension, of future fears. Sometimes it's too much for me, Lord. Too many demands and problems. Too much sadness, suffering, and stress. Renew me spiritually and emotionally. Give me new strength, hope, and confidence. Prepare me to meet the constant struggles of daily life with a deeper faith and trust in you. Let your love set me free for peace, for joy, for grace, for life, and for others forever. May God, you and your family, peace. Sincerely, Phil. I can't tell you how many of those types of letters I've had. I could sit here and read them for weeks. That's how many. And you know, we hear constantly how social media is bad, how it destroys people, and I know it does. But if Ben's death has brought one thing to the top, it's that there are so many great people out there that care about you. And many of you have said, well, Dave, I appreciate what you're doing for me. Well, let's turn the tides. I appreciate what you've done for me. And the letters, the caring, telling me that what our team has done for you and trying to educate the world and save lives, I'm eternally grateful. And I suppose that's one reason why I'm here. Those letters kind of renewed my faith in humanity. So, three stories for you this week.
All right, and then he's going into like his the three stories he's talking about would be going into the missing person stories, which is the majority of what he does, which is why I tuned in last night. But you can probably tell by listening to that. I mean, it's so powerful why it kept me awake last night. But yeah, young people, this phenomena of young people committing suicide. And not even just young people. I heard a story of a woman the other day. She was so, you know, there's a long list of them. You can be guaranteed that the ones that the media are covering are just a tiny percentage of them. Because that's not the narrative. The narrative is you need to get your vaccine. You need to get your vaccine passport. And that COVID-19 is the greatest threat, second perhaps only to the climate change disaster that's going to kill us all in about 12 years' time. You know, that's the narrative. So you can be guaranteed if there's like, you know, you hear these stories, it's scratching the surface of them. But there was one quite disturbing one. There was an old lady. She was so terrified. I think it was an old lady. She was so terrified of catching COVID and maybe spreading it to people she loved that she killed herself. Now, to me, there is a case there for suing the government, because there has been evidence that the direct revelation from, I think it was from Sage or some of these scientific experts, that they needed to up the ante on scaring people because they weren't scared enough when it came to COVID. This is out there in the mainstream. I've got a quote of it somewhere. Some content I was watching brought it up on the screen, and I've got a picture of it somewhere. But these people, I think, you know, there's a case to, you know, for suing the government here. For manslaughter, I think, at the very least. That was a guy called David Paludis. Apart from all that stuff that we were talking about, he's known for, like, reporting and investigating these missing persons. And it being a global phenomenon. His YouTube channel is called Canam Missing Project. That's CANAM Missing Project. And he'd be a really interesting guy to get on one of our shows at some point, whether it's this one or in Republic Broadcasting at some point, perhaps. So, a poll here in Talk Radio, which is a reasonably, I've talked about it before, it's these kind of centrist types. It's the best you're going to get when it comes to mainstream media. Are COVID passports a price worth paying? 78% no, 17% yes. So that's encouraging. But this is, you know, these would be more kind of like critical thinking types and anti-establishment types. Not necessarily, you're not going to be talking about people who are going to sign on to the level of depth of truth and reality that we would delve into on shows like this or on Republic Broadcasting Network, but where people and our listeners can handle the truth and the whole truth. But it's still encouraging. But you've got a huge swathe of the population who are not in this category remotely, who will support these vaccine passports and think, well, that's reasonable. You know, people who don't really think. Probably, again, like the pastor of my church, he'd probably think that's reasonable to protect people, and it's a public health issue. So why not have passports? And, you know, this, like, dumbed-down, simplistic, shallow thinking that, well, we don't want to be spreading the disease, and if you really love people, you'll get a passport, won't you? And then we're all safe. And that's about the, you know, the depth of their thinking. But Johnson is due to discuss this vaccine passport today on an announcement, I think, in about 10 minutes. So maybe I can have an update when I'm on Republic Broadcasting Network this afternoon. That will be midday Central Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. my time, with Richard Kerry on Beyond the Official Narrative. But yeah, these, of course, because of the pushback, particularly in the hospitality sector, where pubs, you know, don't really want to be policing, you know, people coming in for a drink at Westie, whether they've got a vaccine passport, let alone the cost of having a guy in the door 24/7 having to do this. So there's been huge pushback. So, and I think there's been between 70 and 80 backbench MPs in the Conservative Party who are more libertarian-minded who have pushed back on this as well. So, you know, imagine my surprise when Johnson came out and said, well, we're only thinking of doing it for a year. Yeah. It's always temporary, isn't it? They, you know, the word temporary was used in one of the articles I was used. Well, there's nothing more permanent than a temporary government program. Initially, when we went into lockdown, it was for 3 weeks to flatten the curve and protect the NHS. And a year later, we're still in these lockdowns. Okay, there's been some easing of restrictions, but, you know, it's not exactly 3 weeks. And they just recently voted to extend their emergency COVID emergency powers bill, which gives them the power to do whatever they want and put us back into lockdown at any given moment. And, of course, the masks continue despite the vaccine rollout, despite, you know, hospitalizations, deaths, you know, whatever, way down. There is no threat. There is no emergency. There never was. The whole thing has been a complete amplified, deliberately created hysteria for much wider political and economic and generally nefarious purposes. But in an article here, quickly, Boris Johnson to announce trials of controversial vaccine passports. This is in the Liverpool Echo, but they're taking this from a story in the Mirror, which is a larger mainstream media Marxist mainstream media rag. It has been reported that certain events across the country will trial the new coronavirus vaccine passports. According to the Mirror, Boris Johnson is set to announce that the trials of COVID-19 vaccine passports for sports events, big festivals and nightclubs will start next week. He will also outline that if the trial is successful, a national rollout will start in June. It is thought that the COVID status certificates will be available both digitally on an app and on paper signed by a GP. The passports will act as proof the holder has been vaccinated, has immunity from having previously had COVID, or has tested negative. Now, there is a little bit of small mercies there. so that for us who don't want to take the passport, if, for example, I'm not interested in going to football matches necessarily. I'm not. I mean, I haven't been to a football match in years. I'm not interested in going to nightclubs, and I'm not interested in going to pubs, actually. But lots of people are. But I am interested in flying if I ever want to go on holiday, or if I wanted to go to a conference or whatever. So at least if we can prove by going to a GP that we have, you know, maybe had COVID, because lots of people have had COVID and don't know about it. So they might have, you might have the antibodies, and apparently that's going to be sufficient. Or you can go and get a test, and if you test negative, that's going to be sufficient. So a positive antibody test in the last 6 months, which again is a small mercy, because you know that could quite easily be, you know, in the last, you know, 3 weeks or something, or 2 weeks, and then you've got a smaller window. You know, you imagine when you, if you want to book a holiday, usually you book it a few weeks in advance, and you can't really book it, you know, if you can only show that you've had, you know, the window is only a couple of weeks that you'll have a negative test or have the antibodies, you could book a holiday for two months time, and then go for, you know, and then turn up for a test a couple of weeks before you go on holiday, and you test positive, oh, you can't go, and you've got to quarantine for the next 3 weeks or whatever their rules are, and then you've got to cancel your holiday. But anyway, a positive antibody test in the last 6 months will be enough to prove previous exposure. Work is still going on to give passport exemptions to those who cannot be vaccinated, such as pregnant women or those who struggle with repeat tests. Whitehall sources were unable to say how long the passports will be needed, but they are intended to be temporary. It's always temporary. It's always a crisis. It's always an emergency. There's currently no plans to enforce passports in pubs, shops, and restaurants, because I think that would possibly cause a complete internecine collapse in the Conservative Party. Because there has been a lot of pushback from this within the hospitality sector. But if they could get away with it, they would. But people just need to stand up to it and say, no, that's all that needs to be done. But of course, there's a lot of perverse incentives. You know, people who are on furlough know that those jobs don't exist anymore. So they're getting 80% of their wages. Essentially, they're getting a very bloated welfare check. And they know that they're going to have to either go in the dole or find some other little crappy job. And if you work in a pub or the hospitality sector, that's what you're used to doing. That's what your skills are in. So you're either going to go in the dole or then retrain for another position. I don't know, working in a windmill factory or something, you know, build back better. Let's level up. The great libertarian politician Johnson, who molds himself on that freedom-fighting, freedom-loving Churchill. Let's level up and build back better. Total Marxist language. Build back better. Why do we need to build back better? Oh, yeah, because you've destroyed things. You've collapsed everything, destroyed everything, because that's what communist revolutions do. And then they start from year one and bring in their communist totalitarian dictatorship. But they have to destroy what's there first, after they've devoured whatever flesh is on the bones of what's left. And then when they've completely destroyed the West and we've gone through this totalitarian system and this communist hellhole for a few, you know, decades, then there's nothing left, and they've sucked the blood completely out of it, then they'll go somewhere else and do what they do. That's what these internationalists do. But after they're allowed to reopen indoor areas from May 17th, new restrictions, including passports, could later be introduced. I will leave it there, folks. I'll be back again on that, you know, positive note. I will be back again next Monday, which is the 12th of April, 2021. And I will be live, as I say, at 6 o'clock with Richard Carey on Republic Broadcasting Network. It's 12 p.m. till 1 p.m. Central Time, 1 p.m. till 2 Eastern Time, and 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. UK Time. So until then, folks, take care. Look after yourself. Look after your spiritual health particularly. I mean, I thought the David Paulides stuff was very powerful. and a reminder that, you know, to look after ourselves in any way we can, because we guaranteed, as naive as large percentages of our population are, the government's not going to look after you, and to put it mildly, does not have your best intentions at heart. And the more people realize this, the more happiness and joy and freedoms we can have in our life, because this is just, you know, stupidity should be criminalized. Now, this idea that governments only ever have your best intentions at heart and only ever are well-intentioned and make mistakes. I mean, the adults believe this. I mean, it is an absolute tragedy. Go around the world, look around the world today, and then look at it historically. See if there's any evidence for this, that governments have your best interests at heart. But alas, there are a lot of fools that believe this nonsense. Anyway, thank you for tuning in, and I will be back next week. Until then, God bless. Take care.